Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, Club Rossi, the supporters club of Roscommon GAA Club, have been in the news over the last couple of days because they are auctioning off a house in London. So as we've seen over the last little while, many GAA clubs and county boards have been auctioning houses around the country to try and raise money for the ever-growing expenses and the money that it takes to raise the money that it takes to keep the show on the road in county boards. And one man that knows an awful lot about that is the former Roscommon manager, Kevin Maxtay.
When you're facing into challenges that you know there's not going to be a result here, that, you know, the gap is just too big. And that doesn't often happen when you're a player. You're in the right tier, you're in the right league, and you're all, as a player, always believing you're competitive. But when you're a manager and you're looking, you know, say you qualify for Super 8 and it's a tough group, and you're looking around, and I know everybody says, there has to be belief, and you have to always believe you'll win each game. And you do to a certain extent. But that absolute rock-solid belief and confidence when you're playing a Dublin or you're playing a Kerry or whatever, and you know they're going well and you know there are aspects of your game that are serious deficits, I think that's a huge pressure. Trying to get your group to get out there and give their all, to go out there and believe they have a chance, when, you know, the numbers, the stats, everybody's writing you off, you know, and they can't all be wrong. And I think that's a very tough reality. And from reality comes that pressure that there's a big crowd following your team. They're going up to a big match. They're always hoping for the best, you know. And here you are in the build up to it, saying, you know, this ball has to bounce so kindly for us to get any sort of a competitive run in it. And that's, I found that the hardest part. You know, when you're going to play Dublin in Croke Park in a National League match or a Championship match, and you just, it's, I won't say damage limitation, but you know this result is only going one way.
But Kevin, you're the rock then for the players, aren't you? Because I just know for myself personally, I might have self-doubt, but I need to look up at the coach, the manager, and know he fully believes, and I'll follow him.
And Dominic, do you ever wonder, like, the manager is human too. He has his own doubts and issues, and of course the management team, and we're all trying to convince ourselves that we're going in the right direction, we're doing this right, our training is good, our setup is good, our players are good, but there is still a reality there, you know. I know sport sometimes can make a mockery of that reality, and we did a few times during the 3 years. But in an overall sense, I'd have to say that the expectation levels, once you become a Division 1 team or a top 8 team in the Championship, the pressure levels are ramped up, because there is expectation. Even we were ranked maybe 6, 7, 8, 9, something that would be our ranking throughout the 3 years, and that was great for us coming, like, we were upwardly mobile, we were moving in the right direction. But the gap between 1 and 5, from 1 to 4, and then the next group, and then the next group, the gaps are really, really serious. Like, it's, I won't say it's like an AIL team taking on a provincial team, Donegal, but it's like they are big gaps. You know, they're in terms of size, in terms of pick, in terms of power, in terms of athleticism. It's a big gap.
And it always comes down to the talent pool, doesn't it? Yeah. Just more resources, more players to pick.
Yeah. And the more you have to pick, things like size and athleticism and ability, you're kind of taking away those imponderables, shall we call them. That the bigger your pool, you know, if I have a population and I'm picking of 250,000, I'll find a few lads the size of the O'Callaghan around the place. I just will. Yeah. That's the way it is. And whereas our pool in Roscommon was, I think, 65,000, and there's a big claim in Balhadrin for a good few thousand of them as well on the border. So, you know, the pick is, and then you go to Leitrim or Longford where the pick is 35,000 or something like that. You know, and obviously the women and children aren't available for selection. So then the numbers get quite low.
You said in the book about the conditioning that a lot of the guys you felt, or some of the guys you felt, didn't have the conditioning that was required. Was that because they came to it too late, Kevin?
That's a hard one to nail down. I would say at the beginning of, shall we say, the high performance, the idea of a high performance athlete playing Gaelic football, that idea must be 10, 12, 15 years old, I imagine. Rugby got to it, obviously, before that, but the Gaz never too far behind the curve. So I would say Roscommon probably did come to that late. So John Evans would have been the first one to really ratchet it up. And he got a gym built, very fine gym built locally, you know, in the county board offices, and that worked really well. And so that was the first kind of serious introduction from it. They're introduced at academy level now, so, you know, it's an accepted norm now. But back in those days, it wasn't. And then we tried to see it through and bring it to another level. But that culture, I certainly, as manager, found difficult to sell the culture and to insist on the culture, you know. Now, a lot of the guys were fabulous at it, you know, and they bought into it. This, you know, this was their lifestyle, from Sigerson, from DCU, from UCD, UCG, etc., etc. Well, then there was others that didn't quite. And again, I think you'll both understand this. A lot of the time, it's the most talented fellas that don't quite buy into that culture, because I often think, you know, it's looked upon as, that old gym stuff, that's for the average players who just want to get picked, you know, to make themselves available for selection. Like, the real talent only needs bits of that. And that was, you cannot compete. This is the one thing I've learned in my 3 years. And it's getting the same across all the sport, rugby, soccer. You know, if you're not able to challenge athletically, aerobically, in terms of strength, in terms of size, like, you cannot coach size, you cannot coach speed. You can coach a little bit of speed, you can improve it a wee bit, but if you don't have these basics, you cannot compete. You'll compete for maybe 45-50 minutes, and the last 20 minutes then is overlap city, and that's what happens.
Is one of the biggest challenges for us common opportunity, even just bringing it right back to employment? And, you know, I notice around Cork and Limerick, amateur players, you know, if they're playing in the AIL, they have to go to Dublin for work.
Well, and that's a, remember now, you're talking about big cities there, so it's absolutely a valid point. I think it might be in the book, Bree, I'm not sure, but certainly it's a number I remember well. At one stage, I had 26 of my panel, and I think the panel was maybe 34 at the time, or maybe 36. 26 of them were based outside of Roscommon. So Dublin, Limerick, Galway, some of them were guards down in Tip, down in Johnstown. The like of that, some of them were in there was a lad in college in Cavan, you know, they were spread all over the country. 26, like, on the road three times a week coming to training, like, because, and then when they qualify out of college, there's none of those guys coming back, in general, coming back to Roscommon to work in the greater Roscommon area. That's just the reality. That's not just Roscommon's reality, of course. I think one of the big arguments Mayo would have put up over the years is half their team is, you know, based outside the county, and it's an inch or a percentage not having them all together, you know, training halfway up the country or having some of the sessions in Dublin. It's difficulty.
I hate throwing out a problem like that without a solution, though, but there's no solution, should it not? It's just economics. It's just the way it is.
Well, we're very Dublin centric now in terms of our economy, and that's as you said, that's a reality.
So I know that counties are trying to catch up. We just mentioned the conditioning and the athleticism that the very top counties have, and Roscommon have recently appointed a performance manager, and Cork have recently done it with Aidan O'Connell. David Mannix is the Roscommon one. Is it too late? Are the counties too far behind, or can that gap be closed just on the conditioning and physical stakes?
Yeah, it definitely can be closed. No question about that, because these are controllables. Okay, the raw, the absolute, you know, gifted players like a Clifford, these guys we're talking about, you know, Paul Mannion, these sort of guys, okay, that's, you can't control that. They just, you have them or you don't have them. But in terms of the prep, in terms of having these top guys running the programs for you at home, yes, absolutely. If you have the resources, to employ them. And, you know, you have access to the gym and you have access to your centre of excellence. And, you know, unfortunately, Roscommon are a bit behind the curve just on the basic resources of training. We don't have a centre of excellence just at the minute, but it's in the pipeline and we get there eventually. And remember, you know, any squad, you look at Leicester City, I know I'm dipping into the professional arena now, but, you know, you get a squad of 20, 22, 23 fellas together who are well prepared, are well set up, and they have reasonable talent. They can be hugely competitive, of course they can.
I remember reading a really interesting thing Arsene Wenger said about the point of difference no longer being physical. It's no longer fitness or speed, it's mental. So it's pushed on to that level. I think probably in football and hurling at the moment, some counties have made that stride where others are nearly being left behind.
Certainly playing catch up.
Just another element as well, and we were just talking about the pressure and the commitment. I think a lot of people were taken aback by the level of your involvement in the whole setup, the fact that you had to take out your credit card to pay for team meals, that you were getting gym memberships for players, and especially because Roscommon would be viewed as one of the counties who were on, I suppose, the more elite side of things.
Well, I think I was making the point to you, you know, that there's an elite within the elite, you know, there's the kind of the Corks, Dublins, Kerrys who have access, you know, to major resources, as Mayo have as well. And even though you're in the top eight, you know, you can be on the hind tit to a certain extent in terms of resources. But obviously, you know, I should emphasise, I was paid back for that, Marie. Mm-hmm. And that kind of became, I won't say a headline out of it, but the point I was trying to make was that these are issues that other counties, they just don't arise. But when you're in a situation like Roscommon, when you're manager, it's nearly a family. It's like family. You'll do whatever has to be done. You want your group to feel loved, not to feel second class in any way. And so whatever has to be done, you know, we happened to be at that time just going through really bad cash flow in terms of the board, and the finances were in bad shape. And I had a sense that it could come to this someday, but it just happened to be up in Tyrone or at a training camp on another day. But it was no big issue. I was just making the point, you know, as I think I also made the point in the book, making having a laugh towards Jim Gavin. I doubt Jim had to do that type of thing. You know, we used to have to close all gates in the training ground at about 10 to 12, myself and Fergal O'Donnell, on dark, damp nights. And our kind of sign-off laugh used to be, do you think is Jim doing this above in Parnell Park? Probably not.
We used to slag in the pro game anyway, but Munster, we used to always say, when this team goes pro, lads, there'll be no stopping us. And then we had to do stuff like scrub out the ice baths and stuff like that. But I think it leads to a good culture as well.
It does.
One thing I'm massively interested in, Kevin, in your book, The Pressure Game, you mentioned online haters. Mm. And it's a real interesting point to me. I met my old principal in my school, and he said, when bullying took place when you were in school, Donica, it went from 9 o'clock to 3:30 and you got a break. This is 24/7 now for these young people. Maybe just your own experience.
Not a good experience, Donica, because it takes a fairly strong person to completely shut it out, because I have young children. Well, they're in their 20s now, but you know, and they're hugely protective of their dad and all that sort of stuff. And you know, my eldest girl, I once or twice answered one of these, and I said, "No, don't. Yeah. Whatever you do, don't answer them." You know, but it's what I'm amazed is the psychology of it. Are these people, how they have no sense of context? They must feel they're in some vacuum where they can just say whatever. There was one, it was so unfair to players, to management, to me, because they obviously had no real information or insight into what was the reality of our city. But that would never stop them second guessing or making, you know, adding two and two and getting five. But I don't know where it's all going to end, but it is fairly vicious. A lot of it is untrue, obviously. But I just don't know where it goes in terms of the Gardaí or that sort of stuff. But it's a few times it just really was on the edge, really, really nasty stuff. And it's just not nice. It is not nice.
How would you protect your group now? If you know, in hindsight, you know, guys on teams,
it's so difficult. I mean, what do you say? Give me lads' phones. Like the minute we meet up, phones into a bag. You know. Now we tried to keep some discipline around the phone, but the bit for me, like I'm in my late 50s, I don't fully understand the generation that have the phones, that everything they do. Like I'm still looking at maps. You know, I've just come from driving to Belfast. I take out a map before I go.
Joking, Kevin. Yeah, are you?
No, I'm not. Or if I'm booking a restaurant, I'll ring them. You know, but yeah. My kids, like we were in London last year, the year before, and kind of came up and was right. We've that booked and that booked and that, and we're going here and we're booked in to see that monument tomorrow or whatever. And I said, well, who are you talking to? Everything is done on the phone. And I know, obviously, I'm not a caveman. I know the power of these things and I use them from time, but I'm not fully immersed in them. Yeah. Whereas the generation that I was looking after are. I mean, they go to their phone just about every time they have a spare moment.
I moved to Worcester and I noticed that straight away. Everyone was on their phone. So we were, I came from a culture where we chatted and messed an awful lot around the team room. I asked, could we put away the phones? And they were actually saying, we're having all the fun is on the phone.
Yeah,
so they included me on the WhatsApp group, on the Snapchat, and it was brilliant fun. Yeah. It was just a different way of putting it across. But I think there's things that you could take that were, we used to have a 24-hour ban either side of a game just so that someone wouldn't react.
Yeah.
You know, because people can be quite nasty, but it was just a rule. And we always had a rule into a box at mealtime that we chatted.
But you know the fella that always wants to be first with the news to tell you what someone said about you?
Oh,
You don't have to search too far before you bump into him.
Yeah.
Kevin, that kind of highlights as well the importance of management when you're in the role of manager. And I think just from reading recently Ronan McNamee's story, the Tyrone footballer, how important it is and how much responsibility now is on managers as well, just to kind of keep an eye on players, you know, off the field holistically almost. Did you find that as well as a manager?
It's a huge responsibility, Marie. And you have to remember now, I say 34 players in a panel, 15 plus in a backroom team. So you're the manager of quite a decent sized small business, if you like. You know, you're 50 people and you're trying to give them some face time, so, you know, time on the phone, meeting time, etc. And it's not simple. And you're trying to have their world as perfect as you can so that you get elite performance at the weekend. So you want everything to be right. You want their work situation, their college situation. And I have to say, you know, even though we were a mid-ranked county, Roscommon did an awful lot in terms of that. You know, even to the extent we had taxis bringing them rather than a bus situation. They collected them at DCU or at their digs or at their house, wherever they were. And, you know, we made sure we got them back there. We didn't drop them at an RV point and let them make their way home in the middle of the night or anything like that. We looked after them as best we could. You know, we had good people around the management team if they needed to talk to people, that was available all the time, and all in the context, Donnacha, I'm sure you recognise this, and I won't say take it for granted, but you went into a professional area, all in the context of it being an amateur game, even though the background is as professional as you can possibly make it. But it is difficult, Marie. Like there's no getting away that trying to be in control and make sure there's no bumps in the road for 34 footballers and 15 backroom team is a major challenge for the manager and perhaps his assistant and the coach.
So when you take all that into account, like you're talking about the pressures that come with management, the time that it takes, the professional people that you have to surround yourself, you've likened it to running a small business. Do you think it's sustainable that in the future the role of the manager of an intercounty team can stay as an amateur person?
That's a really good question, because the only way I see it going is ramping up further. And you know, just look at the Jim Gavin situation, where, you know, it looks like work and sport just collided, and there's only so many hours in the day, and something has to give. And certainly the managers, you know, that I know that are really in the game for, say, Division 1 and 2, I'd say managers every level, I don't want to keep it to the first two divisions, like, are putting in, have to be putting in 10, 12 hours a day, just have to be. If you just even think of the phone time or the planning time, and then if it's a training night, should there's 5 or 6 hours eaten up just straight away there, going to it, arranging it, training, the aftermath, you know, you have to bite to eat, you have to have a chat with your management, how that go tonight, where are we tomorrow, what's the plan for
throw
the
week? Match analysis.
Yeah, all that, yeah. All that. So there's hours upon hours. So your question's a good question, and I suppose I'm old school. It's not something I'm mad about, you know. And then there's a push from, there appears to be a push among certain players, maybe there are certain elements in the GAA that maybe the top part of the playing cadre will professionalise. It's out there, you know. Even though the GPA deny it and GAA say absolutely no, like, that push is there, because what's the next step? Mm-hmm. The next step is, it goes further on, or else we downgrade it and say, no, you can only come together now X amount of weeks a year. It's a club, number one type of organisation. And, you know, they have these rules where, you know, there's training periods in the year where you just cannot come together. Now, if that was enforced, it'd be, you know, by rule, it'd be very easy for the county game to be squeezed. And, you know, it becomes like the international part of it, the soccer club, if you like, where you're with the club, but they release you to play international football. Well, they release you to play with your county. But if that were to happen, the standard would drop dramatically, obviously, because you don't have the same time together. If you're just, you know, if GAA becomes a county game, which, you know, a lot of members feel it should be, but, you know, I wouldn't want to see that happen either, personally. But what's the next move? I don't know, Maria. It's impossible to say.
I had a real interesting one last week. I met Tim O'Neill, who was involved with the first sponsorship of Munster with Bank of Ireland, and he told me...
Oh, yeah, not Tim. Yeah, yeah.
He couldn't believe when Declan Kidney came in to chat about sponsoring the team. And I was there, Declan Kidney, are you joking? Like, the team...
They sent in
coach.
The manager. Yeah, the coach, yeah.
And it just shows how far rugby has come. Yeah, there would be absolutely no way that
the commercial guy or the CEO
absolutely
is
in that way.
Yeah.
But just on that, then, like, with all those juggling balls of being not only the Bonner Store but everything in that, there is pressure, and that falls down on your family and friends. And did you find that a bit, that they're the ones that probably get the brunt of?
Yeah. Well, they're the ones that see you coming in the evenings in bad form. If, you know, training hasn't been great or the result has gone against you, you certainly don't have the time. Like, the weekends are just gone. Yeah. So the idea of meeting up with lads at the weekend and your own mates, that's out of the question. And, you know, there is a sense of responsibility. I've said this a few times. You're the face of the county team. The people you meet up on the, you know, up the street or around the towns, you know, they're just looking forward to Croke Park and the summer and qualifying and having a great time, and the expectation is, you know, you'll sort this out, or this will all work, won't it? It'll be grand, and yet, like, it is when it's working, Donegal, it's unreal. I mean, when you're buzzing and winning, as we all know as sports people, it's the greatest thing of all time. When it goes the other way and results are going against you and the pressure is mounting, it's a tough bloody place. And, you know, the only people you have ultimately, the people that see you live this and you have to live it. You have to have an outrageous passion and commitment to it. It's not part time. Are your family. They're the people that see you very raw and very annoyed with county board officials, or very annoyed with players on your group, are very annoyed with some member of management. They see you letting fly at 11:30 at home, maybe over a cup of tea in the evening, and they have a real sense of that pressure. But you know, my family were just magnificent throughout the 3 years, and very, very supportive, very protective, and And the conversation we're having, unfortunately, I'm touching towards a lot of the negative sides of it. Like, I'd hate you to think that I didn't have a blast. I mean, we won, we lost, we lived. I say that to so many of my players when I meet them now, you know, now that I'm out of it. Like, we had great fun. When we won a Connacht Championship against the Head by hammering the favourites in the final, jeez, like, we felt invincible, you know. We went up and took on Mayo, and we were within 30 seconds of knocking them out of the Championship. I remember saying, where could this end, lads? You know, that's mad. But, you know, and winning our Division 2 and getting back to Division 1, qualifying for the Super 8s, they were all great moments for us as a group, because we were coming from a very low base, you know. And to see incrementally, week on week, the whole momentum of the group, of the county, of the media that were taking a big interest in our story, to see all that come was great. But unfortunately, when you flip the coin, you know, the highs are high, but the lows are so bloody low. You know?
Would you go back?
No.
What if Mayo came calling?
No, Marie. No, I made they won't come calling anyway. But I thought that through very carefully. You know, I'd given it my best shot. You know, I was all right at it. I wasn't top, but I was okay at it. I had a great club run, and I had great fun with the county. And, you know, I tried to get the Mayo job twice. I wasn't successful. And I'm forever grateful that Roscommon gave me the chance to challenge myself in that environment. And, you know, by and large, I was all right at it. I was okay. The team I had, by and large, we weren't too bad at all. We had a lot of fun. You know, we won and we lost, and we had great crack in around it. I think we did it the right way. You know, maybe a little bit naive. Someone else can judge that. I don't care, really. We had a lot of fun doing it the way we wanted to do it. For Roscommon to go to the next level, of course, they have to change personnel and set up and all that, and Anthony has done a great job on that, and I commend him. I have no issues in my departure with it, none at all. I had great fun, but had to jump back into it, not a chance.
It was the quickest no of all time.
It was just no. I had my time. Like, I'm 30 kind of years tooling around at club management and inter-county. I did minors, you know. I did under 20, I did Roscommon minors, I did Mayo under 21s. I coached and trained Mayo for a year back in the 90s, at senior level, and then I took on the Roscommon thing, having done the bridges. So I've been well immersed in it, and all that time, I might point out, I was with RTE and I was trying to keep an army job going.
Raise a family.
And again, by and large, it all kind of fairly reasonably worked out. Not perfect, but fairly all right.
Yeah. We're chatting to Kevin McStay about his book, The Pressure Game. Kevin, I'm interested, you mentioned that they're jumping the fence from being the coach to the pundit, and you know how it feels to get the maybe honest appraisal sometimes, other times harsh and over the top. How do you feel now dishing it out?
Well, the first thing I'd say is I got a fair, you know, and I'd have a fairly acute ear to what was happening over the 3 years. Roscommon, my team, myself, I think I got a fair shot of 99% of the media, and that's not a bad number now, is it, in fairness, for some of the results we got.
Shame the 1%. Yeah.
No,
it wasn't me. Okay,
I leave him out. Wasn't jury. Yeah. So but again, I would have expected to get a fair rattle at it. Do you know, I mean, I when I was back there in RT or writing for different papers for the Herald or for the Times, I genuinely don't think I went about it as fair as I could. Now, maybe I got it wrong and I hurt people's feelings with some of the lines I wrote or said or whatever. If I did, I certainly didn't set out to do it. But the I got a very fair whip at it, and now that I'm back in with the Sunday Game and delighted to be back in, I know so much more now than I did previously, obviously. You know, the game moved on so much in that period.
And that's the question I have for you. That's going to happen again now really soon.
Well, is it? I don't know how much more we have. Maybe it's always evolving, is it?
I feel it does. I remember chatting to Dennis Leamy, and he'd left rugby only 3 months ago. and we were attacking rooks differently. And he was there, that makes complete sense. And that's probably the question for maybe punditry and people involved in it. How do they keep evolving with the game that's moving at?
Well, the punditry was well behind the game, in my view. It really was. And I think even, you know, I watch all the pundits across all the sport because I'm interested. And the punditry in rugby was well behind as well. Mm-hmm. But they have definitely upped their game. There's no question about that in terms of their analysis, their use of stats, you know. And the big challenge now is to get that balance right. Yeah. You know, it can't be a stat-laden analysis. Like the human eye and this, you know, is this science or art? You know, you have to have a feel for it. You know, the big eye... or your own eye doesn't lie. The eye test is still a big part of it, but the stats are as well. But I think I would say this now because I'm part of it, but I think the Sunday game have really upped their game. But trying to get the balance right now between stats and analysis and entertainment, that is a challenge for sure. But I learned so much in the 3 years that I was involved in Intercounty that I feel I'm a more rounded pundit now. When I look back maybe to the early years, you'd probably be a bit embarrassed maybe about some of the, you know, the idea that there's a man on the sideline, whether he's Jim Gavin or Peter Kane or Mickey Hart, the idea that he's in complete control, or Joe Smith or whatever, and it's a game of chess and they're just moving things, that is so nonsensical. But it's what we pundits like to believe. Well, you know, if you know the one on the TV where the piece of technology allows the player to move, you can move him in and out. I mean, I find that just hilarious.
Yeah.
You know, if he was 10 yards up, further up the line, this where he should have been. Come on. And so I really enjoyed it. I did my first All-Ireland commentary, which was a big bucket wish moment for me. And I enjoyed the year back. And I certainly would have a sense now of being much fairer to the manager and the players, because I understand the madness of it. Like there is a certain madness on that sideline when the game gets tight and every ball is being contested ferociously, and it's just a bounce now. Just a few breaks, a few bounces here and there are going to make you a brilliant manager and the poor other fella a plonker. And that's an unfortunate place we are with a lot of our analysis, is, you know, the team that loses by a point are useless. And the manager is a clown, and the fellow that wins by a point is a genius, which of course, you know, it's not true.
Kevin, just finally before we finish up, I don't know if you agree with me, but it does feel like we're in a funny time for the GAA. We have new rule changes coming in. The Mark, which has got an awful lot of fueled an awful lot of debate. We have the second tier championship coming in. We have negotiations ongoing between the GAA and the GPA. We have training reaching levels that we have never seen before. Where do you think in 5 years' time the GAA is going to be? And then you throw in the CPA as well and all that's going on with them.
Well, 2020 is it's pivotal in my view. And you've listed them all now. And I'll just delve into one or two of them because I wouldn't have enough time to. But the rule changes, they were voted through hastily. I think they were not well thought through by the delegates. I'm sure they were well thought through by the people who presented them, and that all the... empirical evidence that one would need. But I'll take my own county of Mayo. We didn't even send a delegate, you know, to a really important moment in the game where a tier two competition has been voted on and new rules are being voted on, and they saw fit to go to the county final rather than send delegates. And other counties probably did that. And then when tier two was voted on, I think I made this point here previously, Marie, of the 12 teams that we absolutely, well, have a good sense will be in tier two. I think I counted that day, I was trying to figure out who had voted for what. I think about 9 of them voted against it. So here we are now getting ready for a tier two to happen. Dates are out now. So, you know, the lights are on, the wheels are down, the plane is going to land now. And we have over 50% of the contestants, their delegates voted against the concept. And then you put in, you mentioned the Mark, and there's other ones. What I would say, you know, who's going to measure the distance now between the pass? What is it? Is it 20 metres? I think it is, isn't it? Yeah, it is. Like, you can imagine now when that's an All-Ireland final and there's only 19 metres between the pass and you get a handy tap over to win the All-Ireland by a point. There'll be somebody murdered. I mean,
Hawkeye.
Hawkeye won't even figure it. So that was not well thought through in my view, but I'll at least do it the courtesy of I'll wait and see, but I'll be amazed if they turn out the way they're envisaged. The GPA haven't signed off on their latest deal, and that is there's going to take a fair few cracking of heads before that happens, because the gap between them now and what we loosely call official GA and grassroots GA, it's getting wider. And I don't blame the GPA for that. I think it's the perception issue, or they're just not selling what they're trying to do, perhaps as well as they should be. Because I do think they're well intentioned. I really do. Even though I was a slow starter to support them 10 years ago, perhaps. But I think they are well-intentioned in terms of the modern player. And I saw firsthand when I was with Roscommon all the good stuff they were able to do. But those issues are out there. And we're going to have a change of presidency fairly soon. Again, I think John is in his last 12 months now. So he has some major issues to try and tidy up. And then he has of the things that have been passed now, you know, to see those to their full term is not going to be simple. And the Super 8s are going to come up for discussion as well. This is year 3 now, is that right? It is, yeah. This is year 3 coming in. And, you know, something that should have been done yonks ago, like taking Dublin out of Croke Park for 2 matches to, you know, send them down the country. You know, a monkey in charge of a jackhammer would have figured that out the day the fixtures were made, but it takes us 2 years to figure it out. At least it's the right thing. But there's a lot of challenges. 2020 is going to be a big year.
Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. The Pressure Game is available in all good bookstores, and we wish you the best of luck with it. And for GA fans and all sports fans, it's a fascinating read. That was Kevin Maxtay there speaking to us about a whole load of things, including his managerial career, his hopes for the future, and punditry. The scores so far tonight: Man City have beaten Dynamo Zagreb 4-1, and Atalanta have beaten Shakhtar Donetsk 3-0.
Yeah, tomorrow we have our Thursday panel, and we're going to be chatting to three of Ireland's top refs, with Michelle O'Neill, David Goff and Johnny Lacey. So I'm really looking forward to that. You can get your questions into us on 51552. Marie, you're excited about it?
I'm excited about it, but I'm really excited to know whether refs liked you or not.
I don't know.
We can ask Johnny Lacey.
Ask Johnny. He never really refed us, though.
But he'd know.
He was more of a teammate.
There's a referees club, and they know who they like refs and who they don't like.
Yeah. Do you know what? I actually got an awful lot of help from Dave McHugh just to how to be better. And one thing he said to me was, when referees come into the changing rooms, you look like a dog with rabies. Like, you just look...
You look like trouble.
You look crazy. Yeah. Do you know what else is crazy? Tara Stewart is up next.
Game on 2FM. Weekdays from 6.